Welcome to Love, Honor, and Asperger's, a podcast for partners in autistic or narcissistic relationships. Join author April Anderson and her guests as they delve into their personal experiences and offer their insight. With wisdom and wit, this podcast will provide listeners with invaluable guidance, unwavering support, and compelling real-life stories. Ready? Let's dive in.
Hello, my Cassandra brothers and sisters. Welcome to today's episode of Love, Honor, and Asperger podcast. Today, my guest is Jill Richberg, who is a life coach, attorney, and acting teacher. She's been a life coach for almost 20 years and teaches a system based on the concepts of personal will and willingness. Her coaching is also informed by the world of theater and playwriting. She has found that human interactions generally follow the same rules of dialogue, action, and conflict, and teaches people to recognize and disentangle from unhealthy dynamics and establish boundaries through both language and work with personal will. Now, that's a lot to unpack, but I think by the time we're through with this podcast, I hope that you'll understand her system. But first, I want to say that we've used Jill in my family. Everybody except my Aspie husband was probably the one that needed her, although I don't know if it ever would have worked. But I used Jill for my marriage problems with him and trying to deal with this man on the spectrum. And I did have health problems that were pretty bad back in the day due to a lot of different things. And she worked me through that, got me through the years. She also helped my daughter, who is a high achiever, career-minded person who's used Jill for the longest time, to try to decide what job, where do I go? And she's just been extremely helpful to her. And then Jill also helped my son. And now we're back in a marital crisis. And he was so confused. But anyway, she straightened him out and he did well. And he came out of it really well. So Jill, thank you so much for coming on. Welcome to Love, Honor, and Asperger's.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. That was a lot.
So Jill and I were talking. We think it's been about 6 to 7 years I've actually talked to her. You know, but one of the things that she has you do that is very helpful is she calls it a willingness list. Do you want to explain how you do that?
Yes. So I have my own little nomenclature for certain things. Mm-hmm. And willingness coaching is my system. And what it focuses on is the concept of your personal will. And in my little definitional world, that is kind of the sum of all the conscious and unconscious considerations that you personally deem to be important, and that those things lead you to make your decisions in life, right? Mm-hmm. Some of those things you're consciously aware of, and a lot of them you're not.
Right.
So I find that most coaching, most self-improvement programs, et cetera, they rely on and focus on your desire, which is kind of like the positive side of the ledger. I want this because it'd be great in the following ways. Mm-hmm. And that's great, and that'll motivate you to some extent. But the thing that will stop you from doing that are the considerations that you may know about and you may not be consciously aware of that right. Say, "Not, don't do that, stay in this situation," you know, that kind of thing. So you don't need to know everything that factors into your will, but you do need to, in my opinion, start to get in touch with what that physical feeling in your body, in your spirit, if you will, mm-hmm. feels like when you start to get in touch with your will. Because when you work with will, things start to move very quickly and you don't have to control everything so much, right? Mm-hmm. There may be some things that you may have to have some discipline on and make a plan and that sort of thing for sure. But just to get the boat moving away from the dock, that's usually the hardest thing for most of us. And that's going to be dictated by working with your will. So the sort of exercise that I give people to start to get in touch with your will is every day. Mm-hmm. You write a very short list, no more than 3 or 4 items. And what you do is sit quietly. You're going to write on the top of your sheet of paper, put the date on it so that you can kind of keep track. I am willing to be, do, or have. And it means in that exact moment, not in general, not what is your 6-month plan? You know, what would mm-hmm. not, where would you like to be in 20 years, sir? You know,
right.
That moment, what am I willing to be, do, or have? It could be, you know what? I'm willing to sit around and do absolutely nothing today. Uh-huh. Now that it's not a to-do list. So it doesn't mean that that's what you're going to do or not do that day.
Right.
You're just trying to get in the habit of checking in with your real self, not trying to fix it, not trying to make it better, sound nice and all that, because all those things will keep you out of touch with that motor that is going to get you away from the dock. So you're not looking to set goals in this. As you write your list from day to day, you don't have to check back the day before. What did I say yesterday? Did I follow up on it? None of that. It's just like sticking a thermometer in your mouth. You're just checking to see where you are now. So, you know, you might be, let's say you have a day off, right?
All right.
And you're thinking, okay, I really want to get the attic cleaned out and I want to do this. You might really, your will might be, yeah, as I think about it at this moment and as I check in with how I feel in my body, and that's another thing you're going to be in touch with.
Right.
If you write something down or think about writing something down, your chest gets tight or you feel like, oh, gosh, yeah. That's not something you're willing to do. It doesn't mean that you won't do it. You might have to do certain things, but that's not the point of this list. It's getting in touch with what's really going on with you. Okay. So that is a great first step to start to get in touch with, well, what am I really all about?
Right.
What's really going on? And another thing you can do, and I don't recommend doing this first, but you can also look at what's going on or not going on in your life. And that will tell you pretty much exactly where your will is. Now, of course, things happen in life, right? You know, you might lose a job or somebody gets hurt or you get sick or something like that. And those are sort of temporary things or things that are kind of imposed upon you. But anything that is at all volitional, where you have some kind of choice in it, anything that is in your life at that point, that's your will.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's what the willingness list is. And that's what the concept of will is. It's helpful for a lot of us, but it's right. Certainly helpful, I think, for people who are in situations like, you know, maybe you're with someone with Asperger's or a narcissist, or you're in a job where you've got an abusive boss, anything with these kind of like heightened dynamics,
right?
Where you lose touch with your actual will because you're so busy reacting.
I actually had a journal. I mean, I had a lot of journals, because if you do a willingness list every day, that's a lot of pages, right?
Right.
It is. And so I pulled them out. I said, I know I have them. So I pulled them out of the drawer and I thought, do I dare peek at these things? And I haven't done it recently. And you could always do it, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just, whenever you just need to get in touch with yourself. But I just got off doing it every day when things have gone better. But I looked down and I went, oh, I'm so happy to see that I moved past so many of the things that were influencing me, or however you would say it, Jill. I just went, oh, no, I don't worry about that anymore. Oh, no, I'm not worried about that anymore. You know, I've gone past that. My whole willingness list today would be different than it was back when I was, you know, married to the Asperger person.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's great. And, you know, and it's not something you have to do every day for the rest of your life. You can do it, you know, I don't do them every day, but you can do them whenever you feel like you're in a rut or whatever. And it gives you a good read. If you feel like you're in a rut sometimes, and nothing is, you sometimes will sit down to write a list and you won't be able to think of anything to write. Mm-hmm. And that's because your will is so stagnant at that point that you're not interested in creating anything. And that's just what it is that day, you know, and that's okay to do. That is also okay to do.
But I cheated and I would get into a lot of, my list got too long.
Yeah.
I would say do 3 or 4 and I would end up, oh, and how about this? And a couple times my lists were too long.
Yeah.
I don't know if I confused my will, but I kept thinking of another thing and another thing.
Yeah. And I think some of that, April, had to do with, you know, the relationship you were in, because, you know, as you taught me and showed me in our coaching, you know, the dynamic with someone with Asperger's is there's so much dialogue going on and so much drama and high stakes interaction that, you know, you start to feel like I am equal to what I can get done, or at least what I can avoid or what I can prevent having happen, you know.
Right, right.
It's all about action. It's not, you're not in touch with yourself so much at that point. So that's completely understandable that the list, you know, will get too long.
It was just too long. So now I remember, well, one of the things with the willingness list, and we talk about the boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if you get that so much, but, or is that more to do when you work with a theater thing where we're all going through our own little plays and stuff?
Yeah, it does tie into the theater thing. So this is, you know, maybe a little bit different from coaching work that people have been exposed to. So we've all heard of the law of attraction, most likely, you know, if people right. say, oh, what you focus on happens, and what yeah. you want, what you deep down want, or what you deep down fear is going to, nah, not so much, right? I think mm-hmm. it's more characters, I don't want to use the word attract, characters create stories. Mm-hmm. So each of us, based on the sum total of the contents of our will, show up in the world as a certain character. And that can shift a little bit depending on who you're with, right? Mm-hmm. But you're a certain character, and you're going to be, the thing that forms relationships is dialogue. And okay. so if you're a character whose character will generate dialogue that another character can engage with, and then you have, you know, you have a dialogue together, right? Mm-hmm. That's going to be a person in your life. It could be your boss, it could be a neighbor, it could be your husband, that, you know, whatever, friend. But the vast majority of people that you meet, you probably won't even notice, right? It could even be colleagues that you've worked with for 10 years. You might know nothing about them. They know nothing about you because your characters don't have anything to say to each other.
Okay.
Right. So when you go into a situation, whether it's a new relationship or an existing relationship or marriage, for example, you might want to start listening to the words that you're saying to your partner or to, you know, the other person in the relationship. Mm-hmm. What am I saying? How am I moving? Am I moving in a way where my shoulders are slouched? Am I shuffling and asking, is there a question mark on the end of everything that I say? Mm-hmm. You know, for I'm just taking some obvious examples. And those things are going to reveal character. So say that that person is showing up, I am non-assertive, mm-hmm. or I'm passive, you know, or I'm frightened, let's say. Mm-hmm. If another person is going to stay in dialogue with you, they have got to adopt, mm-hmm. a character that allows them to talk to you. So if I'm acting like Lady Macbeth, right, mm-hmm. you can't come in as Scooby-Doo. We're not going to have a relationship, right? And right. so if people are in a captive situation, this would be more in jobs or, let's say, neighbors or, you know, people in your condo association or something, people will tend to start to maybe even behave in ways that they don't normally behave because they've got to stay in dialogue with the other people in the situation.
Right.
You're in a marriage and you've been showing up in a certain way.
Right.
And it could be, and a lot of times, so say you're, you know, with someone with Asperger's, mm-hmm. the way you become is probably not the way you were when you met the person.
Well, that's the thing. Your character, however you were saying, you change
right.
to adapt to his character. Or whatever.
Exactly. To stay in that dialogue. So there's going to, and I recall when we were working on this, you know, there was a lot of, I've got to fix this. Mm-hmm. I've got to prevent this disaster from coming on. I've got to correct this person. I've got to guide this person. I've, you know, all that.
So exhausting.
It's exhausting. And but the thing with someone with Asperger's or even narcissism, let's say, for example, these are not conditions that change. And so you have to remind yourself, and you can start to work with that in your willingness list, that it doesn't matter what I do or say, this person is not going to change mm-hmm. or improve or whatever. And so it is, then you can start working with the concept of, am I willing mm-hmm. to go back and be who I used to be.
Right.
Now, that's assuming you weren't always a person, you know, with these people. But, you know, yeah. there was probably a time when you
probably wasn't. Yeah.
Right. So right. is that something you're willing to do? You're giving up some stuff, right? It might be if I'm giving up a relationship or a marriage. It's also giving up an identity. There is a positive hit for correcting someone else. You may not like it. It's physically exhausting. But for most people, there's something that we like about being right.
Right.
So that's addictive. There's also something that we, now when I say like, I don't mean love, mm-hmm. but there's the will is like, okay, I don't love the way this feels, but net, net, there's a positive to it. And that positive comes with being angry. So anger, right, creates an adrenaline hit that staves off depression, mm-hmm. energy. Mm-hmm. It wakes you up in the morning or in the middle of the night, either one, right? You know, it's an addictive chemical.
Yeah. And we do, you know, get stuck in this addictive negativity. Really, you do. Mm-hmm. You don't know how to get out of it. And you actually get, you know, like the Stockholm syndrome or whatever they call it, you get addicted to being upset. I have a friend, I always figured if she ever got out of her horrible relationship, I don't think she'd know who she was or anything. She's so used to this whole cortisol and this anger and this, that's how she identifies. Well, she doesn't mentally, you know, mean to identify, but I mean, that's, I think, how she has identified herself all this time. She just changed into all that. Mm-hmm. Just because of trying to get on, you know, playing this other role that she really never should have played in the first place.
Right. And, you know, so if you're in a situation like that or a marriage, the first thing and the best thing you can start working with is, you know what? I'm not responsible for how this person behaves.
Yeah, that's where I made a big mistake on that.
And it's hard to get out of that because if you're in a captive situation, you're married, you're with, you know, with kids, you know, you've got a home. It's not so easy to just jump up and walk away. So I do call it sort of a captive situation, at least for a certain period of time.
Right.
Until such time as you become willing to leave and able to leave. So, you know, try to take the guilt out of it. Why am I putting up with this? And how have I been in this for so long? Try to take that out of it and recognize that you've been in a dynamic that is very addictive. It's kind of like being addicted to watching a soap opera or, you know, Game of Thrones or something. You don't need to feel badly.
I mean, it's true. I mean, it's so hard to think of that, you know?
Yeah.
Because all you want to do is be free of it, but yet you're addicted to it.
Mm-hmm.
Or one is, all of so many of us. Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't make you a bad person, a weak person. It just makes you a person who's addicted to a high adrenaline situation. And so then you're going to start to work with your will. Okay, what would it look like? How would I feel if I were in a situation where I don't get to be right 3, 4, 10, 20 times a day?
Right.
Right. What would it feel like if I don't get that hit of adrenaline? Yeah! 3, 4, 10 times a day.
That's true. Right? That's true.
You know, there's something to that. It doesn't make you crazy and stupid if you're addicted to those things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So okay. Guilt out of it, right?
Right. Well, I'd like to tell a story where I was, I think by then I always call my ex former because somebody said it's kind of, it's more proper to say your former husband than your ex. I call my ex former, but I was in the transition time where he actually moved out. That's a big step, but we were still seeing each other a lot and doing things. And I remember having a session with Jill. I don't know if you remember this, Jill, but I'm trying at this point to get out of the addiction, to get out of the boundaries, you know, to free myself up more, detach more. But I wanted to go down to Florida and see Tiger Woods. Do you remember that at all?
I do.
And because we had a fuss. We really had a fuss. And so Jill says, no, you know, that's not what you're supposed to be doing right now. And I said, but I got tickets and I like Tiger and we paid this money and I want to go. And finally, Jill, who said, no, it's not what you're doing. You're just, you know, going backwards on that kind of idea. But well, anyway, so when she gave up on trying to coach me to not to do it, Jill finally resolved and said, all right, if you're going to go with them, don't basically like, don't get triggered. Don't get into the fusses. Just try to stay, you know, keep into yourself. And well, you know, you can't be with this man without getting triggered, but I managed to, when I was going to yell or flip or something, I managed to like cover it. Like I'd be going to go, yeah. Oh, sorry. I had a cough. You know, I did. I swear. One time I went out a door and I was like, you, and I, but so I made it through that. But here's the part that I think is kind of funny. So Jill said, keep, like you're saying, your cortisol, keep yourself calmer. And so Jill suggested that I meditate just for a few minutes, maybe like 3 times a day, just keep my cortisol down, calm myself, center myself. So we went to the tournament, had a wonderful day, really. And then driving back, and we had an RV. And I thought, this is the time I'm going to do this meditation and be prepared for the evening or calm myself. So I'm sitting in this. So I shut my eyes, got myself into a meditative mode. And then I hear from my ex-former, crap, I missed the turn. So we missed the turn on the highway because I took my mind off the watching him for 2 seconds. So my cortisol went right back up. Got myself all upset. I thought, well, that meditation didn't work at that point. That was funny. I mean, I'm not kidding. I thought, I can't believe this. I can't even meditate.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, but I made it through that trip. But yeah, that was an advice I didn't take from Jill. And I don't know if it set me back or what, but all I learned was trying to meditate with him around him work.
Yeah. And you know, you have to try some things, you know, and it's not always going to work. Or you'll have partial success. And that's okay. These are, you know, steps toward getting
it's hard. Yeah, it takes a long time.
Yeah, it takes time and you have to, you know, trying out that new character. So in recounting that story, so you took your eye off him for a minute, he missed the turn, he missed an exit or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had not been in that character interaction,
mm-hmm.
anyone else missing a turn or missing an exit would not have made you upset. Right? It would be more, oh, we missed the turn. Oh, that's all right. Well, you know,
right.
It is what it is. Things happen, right?
Right.
But the addiction or the character right. interaction was, I have to be upset if I am unable to prevent some mishap or disaster or whatever.
Right.
But the good thing is when you start to be able to step outside of this the interaction a little bit, even as it's happening,
mm-hmm.
like, oh, you know, I don't want to get upset, but I am upset, but I don't want to get upset. That's a step. That's a positive step.
Hey,
you
right.
know, that's yeah. starting to get out of the character and step away from the play a little bit, and it'll get less and less addictive, you know?
Right, right. The other thing I thought was, well, there's two things we can talk about. Jill can help people, you know, decide how to live in the relationship that's not, you know, exactly working right. Or actually, even when you have one that's pretty good, like I'm having now, I think, and I'm using her a little bit, or how to, you know, maybe just actually divorce or separate. And once that's done, we've got women that are now on their own, and usually it's women, but it could be guys. And now they got to think, well, now what do I do? You know, I've escaped. I'm here. Where do I go? You know, what do I do? What career do I want? And so then that's another thing that Jill can help you people with too. But so I wanted to say, what I thought was interesting, if you talk to Jill about career choices and things, there's always something that Jill finds, I think, that we just don't think of. Like, for example, I was thinking of an example, which because it happened to my daughter, but I want to talk about her personal stuff. But somebody could say, Jill, now I'm working for a vet. Let's just say a veterinarian. And I don't get paid very much, but I really like the people. But I have a new job offer and they can probably pay me more. But then I have to leave these people. And you go on about all this kind of crap. And then Jill would probably say, after listening, she probably say, or she could say, from what I hear from you, you don't want to be a vet. Right, Jill? She would say that. You know, she hears it and then she say, you don't even want to do what you're talking about. I can, mm-hmm. what do you talk about your feelings or how do you say that where you can identify that in somebody?
Yeah, I won't say I can consciously hear someone's will, but I think with my theatrical training, I studied and taught the Meisner technique for years, which without getting into a whole bunch of detail, focuses really heavily on listening and yeah. observing, you know, in a way that you don't in your real life, because if you did, you'd be in jail by noon because, you know, you really took in things the way they're said and done. You would just be a lunatic, but the theater works great.
Yeah, right.
But I that kind of listening when I'm coaching and I don't censor myself and say, oh, well, they couldn't mean that. Or, you know, well, this other job that they're talking about, it's going to pay twice as much. So Jill, you need to encourage them to go over there and mm-hmm. then they'll have a testimonial about how they doubled their salary mm-hmm. while they were coaching with Jill. You know, all these things that have right. nothing to do with what's the real feeling that I'm getting from this person? What am I actually hearing? And sometimes talking with people who are not in your regular friend circle all the time,
right?
You know, because your friends get used to hearing things and they don't really listen as closely. Maybe when you're coaching and someone is being paid to actually listen to what you're saying, most people, if they have the opportunity to speak, they will say exactly what they mean. They may not realize it, but I've had people, and this makes me sad to say, I've had a woman tell me without telling me that her husband was, you know, touching the children. Okay. And she didn't even realize she was telling me that, but I know how to listen. Right.
Oh so, my God, Jill. Yeah. You do know how to listen.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You know, people can tell you anecdotal things and you start putting it together, but it's helpful because, you know, sometimes you don't really realize what you're saying or how you feel about things or we're beating ourselves up trying to make ourselves want a certain thing when it comes to, like, you know, picking a career or where should I right. move? I should want this. This seems to be, but it's not really in alignment with the will. And so it'll, you know, create problems. And then also, now I'm not a career coach, but I do know that when you're starting any relationship, friendship, job,
mm-hmm.
for a job, for example, you know, let's say now, okay, wow, I'm single. I got to go get a job. I have to find out what I'm doing. I got to make new friends.
Right.
The character you're playing when you meet people is going to determine how those relationships go. And it's very hard for some reason It's very hard. Once people are in an interaction with you, they're playing a character, they know their lines, they know what lines to expect from you, everything's running the way it's supposed to run, whether that's dysfunctional or healthy. It's difficult to then get those same characters to start speaking different lines.
Right.
So, and this is one way that you can get rid of people if you have to.
I've just got a situation not coming up and I can't say too much, or I think some people are, I don't know how to tell them, you can't have 1,000 texts and too much time. You just can't make somebody your instant best friend or something. And I don't have no idea how to get out of sort of the way I've started with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it got out of control. It's okay, but I'm busy. And, you know, this whole texting and communication, I have to do the dishes once in a while. Or I have to go for exercise. You know, and how are you doing? Yeah, so I got into, a character with these people. Mm-hmm. They happen to be, I can't say, but they're in a group sort of. And I don't know how to withdraw back now.
Right. And there's going to usually be some sort of loss of companionship. You know, someone in that circle or whatever is going to, they may still love you or like you or whatever, but they may just not have lines to speak with you. You know what I mean?
Right.
I just don't have anything to say. There's no harm. And that's when you'll see people.
Yeah, my lines are wearing out with these people, really. Am I?
Yeah. You know, so some people may drift away as you start to change the character you're showing up at.
Right.
Other people, you'll have a big fight.
Right.
Or it'll just seem like you're talking past each other, but it works every time.
Mm-hmm.
If you need to get out, if you need someone to leave you alone, you start changing the dialogue.
Right.
If they can't meet you on it, they will leave. They will leave.
They will leave.
As opposed to stop calling me, which can, you know, create all sorts of drama.
Yeah. We are. I think all of us are so lost in that kind of a thing. You know,
Not
even talking about the marriages and stuff, but to get stuck in something. And I have a friend. She has a friend that keeps coming out to visit. I'm coming to visit. She doesn't know how to get her to stop. You know, so we're like, I don't know, what are we? We all need coaching. We're all a bunch of wimps on this, I swear. But I want to say one thing with Jill, what you're talking about, how she listens. She listens and, you know, we go on about something and then, you know, she just kind of gets a feel, I guess, like you're saying, you have this talent from your, maybe from the theater or just, you know, training yourself so much. She has a talent for really getting underneath everything. It's not like just talking to your girlfriend. You know, you said this, I said this, you know, because I'll be going on about something. She's like, nope, it's not any of that. And she tells you really what it is. But some of the times I have to say, Jill, I have to think, you know, it doesn't just come to me in 2 minutes after Jill will say, try this or try, you know, the dialogue or you're in this kind of a rut or boundary, all the things she'll say. But I'm telling you, I'm going for a walk or vacuuming or something. I'll go, this is what Jill meant. It comes, it's like it's to germinate. You know, have you found that with any of your other people? I mean, it like germinates in my mind because you're not going to somebody and just say, you know, should I do this or should I do that? And I think that, you know, you've got this whole dynamic, this whole willingness and feelings. And it just slowly, I'm telling you, and sometimes it'll take me a week or a couple of days or what. And I'll go, that's what I was supposed to be doing. Now I get it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to happen. One, because maybe my coaching is a little bit unusual. So some of the terms I use and the, you know, approaches and conceptual approaches are a little bit different. So it may not hit you right away, but also going back to that will concept.
Mm-hmm.
So you hear what I said, your will has there are no like sort of receptors in there to
right.
take it. But it's just kind of floating around. And then that will start shifting because your will shifts all the time, vis-a-vis certain, you know, various topics.
Uh-huh.
And so it might shift just a tiny bit because I heard this thing and it went in the back of my mind and, you know, and something starts to shift and then there's enough shifting and it doesn't have to be conscious where, like you said, you'd be vacuuming like, oh, right.
That's it.
Right. You know what I'm saying? So that's not unusual. We really have to honor the complexity of ourselves. You know,
okay.
I think so much coaching, I don't know, there's just such a sort of a hegemony of beat yourself up, make yourself do this, go for it, you know, and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And it usually people reject it outright or they get started and then just get burned out because it's not addressing the will in any way.
Right.
The will, which will have those negative considerations in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you wrong. But to go back to the Asperger's, if I could leave people with one concept who are people who are in relationships or have, you know, Asperger's people in their families or lives, mm-hmm. that person is not going to change.
That's the thing.
So the exercise that you're doing in deciding, okay, can I live with this? How long am I going to live with this? You know, all those things. It's really a question of how long am I willing to push against this mountain that I know is not going to move?
Right.
And that's really the question. That's what you're working on. You're never working on how can I change that person? How can I improve that person? How can we live together more harmoniously? Blah, blah, blah. You're not doing any of that. Right. So that's the first thing that's, you know, that's going to take a little bit of work, you know, with your will to accept that, because there's going to be a mourning and a grieving process in there that is different from maybe the initial grieving process when you first realized, oh man, this person.
Not going to make it. I just fought against that forever. You know, I needed more help early on. You know, I was married 38 years till I knew what was wrong with him. And nobody, we didn't have the forums, I didn't have anybody. I'm like, you know, just to keep banging your head against the wall, trying to change somebody. And really, you had to do the willingness thing. What was I willing to go through? And really, it turned out to be not a whole heck of a lot at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to go through all this. I just wanted to tell a little anecdote here with my divorce. So, you know, I've talked to Jill off and on, and my husband's ex-former is living in his own place. And it's gone on like 4 years, I think it was. But we would still do our little trips or do things or the kids or whatever, work on the house together. But it was always something that didn't work out real well when he was around. I would just didn't feel good. You know, I would, you know, once in a while I would help him with some medical or something, work together. But I didn't feel really, I felt still nasty when I was around him. So I said to Jill, and I didn't know if divorce, actual real divorce, when you got the grandkids and the money and the houses and all the paperwork, whatever you have to do, would fix it. If somebody would have just said, it will make you feel better. I just didn't know for sure. But so I said to Jill one time, I said, I just don't know if I should get a divorce. How will I know? I don't know what to do. I just don't know if I should really get divorced. Will that change things? Will I be able to move on? And so Jill says, I know this doesn't sound like I'm saying very much or helping very much, but she said, you will know. Do you remember telling me that at all?
Yeah.
She said, you will know. And I'm thinking, well, thanks for that. No, but I didn't really do. I really didn't. But I thought, okay, I will know. Well, I'll be darned. I don't know how much later, a couple months maybe, could have been, not too long. I remember he'd been away or something, came back into the house because he doesn't live here. I can picture. I'm sitting here at my computer. He's down the hall. He gets a little text or something about golf on his phone, like he was always golfing and never home or whatever. And I went, that's it. And I looked at him. He didn't want to get divorced. He really didn't. He liked having me around, I mean, to cover for him. I always said that. Aspie guys like to have the wife and kids to cover. And he was down the hall. And I said, Bruce, I want the divorce. And he's looking at me like, huh? I said, I'm doing it. I want to do it. And being that he was an attorney and we had an amicable divorce, we just wrote out a paper and worked it out and we did it. But it's been wonderful. I'm telling you, I've had the best year. I had a session. This whole year of being divorced, it's been a year and a half. I've just met new people. I've changed. I've grown. I mean, I guess my character, my will. I mean, I meet younger people. Not that it matters, but it's just I met some people running, some people in meditation group. It's just like my whole world has expanded. But that's got nothing to do with really what we're saying here. But the thing of it is, I did know. I did. It just hit me. So Jill was right. She can't say, well, you need to get divorced exactly 2 weeks from now, or, you know, let it go another 6 months and see what happens, you know, but it just kind of germinated in my mind. And when I said, let's do it. And so anyway, it's a whole other way of looking at things. You're just not going to go to some therapist or somebody that's going to say, you need to do this, you need or do that. Or what do you think about, you know?
Yeah.
But it works out.
And your will was shifting. And, you know, sometimes you have to take intermediate steps. So getting the separation and, you know, starting to see like, okay, how am I going to handle this and that without my husband? Those things start shifting your will over time. And so I knew that you were on the path and that when the time came, you would make that decision. There was nothing else that needed to be done at that point, you know, because you were out of the addiction part of the dynamic.
Yeah.
So now your will could start to move much more freely. And it was. So, yeah, it was just a matter of time.
So we're getting near the end here. Joe, do you want to add anything more before we tell everybody how they can get in touch with you and so forth?
Just to say to anyone dealing with Asperger's or any narcissism, any kind of neurodivergent personality type, don't blame yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And the flip side of don't blame yourself is don't for a minute think that you're going to change it at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about getting back to yourself,
mm-hmm.
rediscovering the character that you actually were prior to that or who you'd like to be now, and put all your thoughts, focus on that, and the path will start to reveal itself.
Okay. Now, Jill's last name, her name is Richburg. I might make sure people get this spelled right. I've had problems with that, but it's R-I-C-H, like Rich Berg, B-U-R-G, Jill Richburg. And do you want to tell them your website? Or, well, it's not your website, it's your email.
Yeah. You can always reach me at willbedone, those words written out, W-I-L-L-B-E-D-O-N-E, at mindspring.com. I have to spell out Mindspring because that's an old-time domain. So mind, like you think with, spring like the season, one word, will be done at mindspring.com.
Right. Well, that's just great, Jill. So nice to talk to you. You've helped me so much. I hope people reach out because they won't be sorry. I can tell you that.
Oh, thank you.
And I'll be back. I'll be back with my new life going on. I've already had one session. I told her I'm going to be having another one because, I always think you need outside help. Another perspective, especially somebody that's so trained like Jill.
It's so helpful. I've done it a couple of times and it's just been like, wow, how did this person tell me in 30 minutes what I've been needing to hear for 6 months? Jeez.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. And it was fun to talk. You take good
care, Jill. Fun to talk with you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Please review, subscribe, and tell a friend. My website is www.aprilanderson.net. And remember to trust yourself, be strong, and don't let them get you.